From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site, on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. You ready, David, to recap?
I've never been more ready for anything in my entire life.
We got to recap week 12. Mm. We had a bunch of like sort of coin flippy games, teams that could have like separate themselves a little bit from the muck. There's a lot of muck in the middle. Like, you want to try to get towards the top of the muck.
Can we all have a serious conversation right now?
Yeah.
The entire Big Ten, aside from the top four teams, is muck.
Okay, there's a lot of muck. But there are some teams like try to climbing the muck to get to the top of the muck as opposed to being more of the bottom. We have a pretty clear bottom of the muck. Mm-hmm. There's this middle of the muck, and some teams, a bunch of teams like fought each other to sort of, you know, claim their stakes in the muck area.
Oregon, almost, while it was mucking out the stables, almost tripped and fell into the muck.
They could have been mucky, for sure.
They could have gotten mucked.
They survived. We got, like, the Ohio States and
Penn State. They successfully mucked out the stables.
Yeah, they're like, get this muck out of here.
Yeah.
So we got all that. Unfortunately, one of our posters, their child is no longer living in a world where UCLA's never lost a football game. So we'll get into all that kind of stuff. Recapping what's going on here, we probably should spend a lot of time talking about the picks since I kicked your butt this weekend, so that was nice. We won't do that.
Colt has a good point, though. He's lashing out because his son is no longer undefeated, but didn't know Ryan was a shirt under polo guy.
This is a long sleeve shirt. I don't know. It's cold outside.
It's got a polo cut, though.
It's got a polo cut, yeah.
And you are wearing an undershirt underneath your polo.
Yeah. And Colt says rub it in, right?
Is that a common thing for you? Do you do that often?
Not if I'm golfing or anything, but it's cold, so I'm going to...
You layer up?
Yeah. Plus, I'm going to go to the gym later, so I wear my gym shirt underneath and put this on top, and then it's like, you know...
And then you look...
efficiently.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
I'm efficient. I'm going to the... I told David I'm going to La Brea Tar Pits a little bit later with my mom as soon as the show... is done.
Let's go to lunch on Thursday. How about that?
Thursday lunch. I like that.
Great.
Oh yeah, people were asking about the about the lunch there. Yeah, I forgot to look at the chat there.
We'll call it my birthday lunch. How about that?
Oh, your birthday's coming up.
Yeah, it's tomorrow. I turn I think 64. Yeah. It's very nice.
Happy early birthday, David. Yeah, David
appreciate
Woods.
It.
That's
appreciate
awesome.
It.
Yeah, well, let's do your birthday lunch on Thursday.
Yeah,
since I've already been paid for it, and then I just have to pay.
Correct.
We should split it, maybe.
Yeah, let's split it.
All right. Well, we got a good show. If you want to email us, Big10Cast, all spelled out, at gmail.com, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678. I think we got a couple of text messages to read for you today. Twitter, X, at B1G podcast.
Did you just say X?
Twitter or X? Well, there's all, now I just say Twitter all the time, and then some people get, don't
who?
Like, I don't know. Are you doing Blue Sky? I haven't done that.
I've had an account on Blue Sky. So I got it back when it was like invite only. That whole thing. I got code. Yeah, but I signed up for it, and then I'm like looking at it, and like, I can go deep into it, but like, mostly there's just weren't that many people there. But now I've gotten, I don't know, like 150 people following me in the last like 4 days. So I think it's actually maybe tipping over. It's got a little bit of early Twitter feel to it now.
Okay.
Which was kind of fun.
Is it like the former Twitter people? They started their new one?
Yeah, I don't know. The whole dynamics of like what, I don't know. It's like a protocol, whatever, who gives a shit. The other problem that I had, it was very, that's a conversation for another day. It was just very insular. Like, you know, just everybody saying the same stuff. I like a little, you know, a little back and forth.
Oh, yeah. So it's people that are upset with, like, Elon Musk are probably doing that. So it's only
it's not. Yeah, it was a lot of that. And it was also just, I don't know. Anyway. The thing with Twitter now is that it's just so inundated with AI. Shit, like it replies to everything are just like AI generated slop that it's like, this is, it's the user experience has really gone down. So I might at some point go fully over.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
We don't even have a Podcast of Champions one yet. So
we should probably get one.
Maybe we can do that.
Yeah.
Alex, don't forget to wish Jim Mora a happy birthday as well. We got a lot of happy birthdays.
Yeah, we share a birthday.
Very cool. Yeah. Matthew, Dave's in full participation in Blue Sky as much prep as for this show. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a lot of prep that goes into this. David actually does some stuff. He creates the YouTube, you know, schedules the YouTube live chats,
which we are live. I do so much for the show.
We are live on YouTube. And if you're listening, we're reading some comments from our live chat in YouTube. So we appreciate everyone that's joining us live. No super chats yet. So a bunch of lazy, cheap people watching this free show.
Wow.
This morning. No, I'm just kidding. We don't need all that stuff. But great stuff, everyone. Appreciate you being on. Appreciate you listening. However you're doing, we are like week 12. It's just, it's been a slog, you know. It really has. It's our first year as the foremost experts covering Big Ten football. First year really just covering it. We did it secretly, you know, and now we're doing it full time.
Hell yeah. We beg and we receive, Ryan. We beg and we receive. Kings fan, happy birthday to you, my good man. Hell yeah. Another birthday share.
I love it.
Everyone should be born on November 19th. You know what was written on the November 19th or spoken? The Gettysburg Address. That's right.
Really?
Baby. Hell yeah. You know who else was born on November 19th? Jodie Foster.
Oh.
That's the only famous person I can think of.
Okay.
Who was born on November 19th, aside from Jim Mora.
That's cool. Jim Mora, yeah. And
Jim
you.
Jim Mora.
And you.
And me.
Duh, famous.
Whew, yeah. Boy, howdy. I explained this to people. In a one-mile radius around a UCLA football game, I got some juice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that is the only place in the entire world.
It is funny when that stuff happens and someone will come up to
you. When I get recognized at Disneyland, that's when it's time to, you know, pack it in. Start being a guy who just wears huge sunglasses and travels in a private car, you know?
I was at Tower 12 the other night that we had like a going away party for one of the trainers at my gym. And just kind of group of people and someone's like, you know, I go to the bar to order a drink and the guy and his wife is like, hey, man, I love the show. And he's a bro. Mm-hmm. I texted you. I'm like, he's a bro. And he just likes the Podcast of Champions and stuff. And people are like, what is that? I'm like, yeah, that happens sometimes, you know, whatever.
It's super weird whenever it happens.
Yes, but it's funny. Yeah. But anyway, thank you for the super chat. That is awesome. So we got to recap week 12. But before we do that, this is our time to look at our reviews. So we do love when you guys review the show. If you have Spotify or Apple Podcasting app, if that's how you listen to shows, it seems like most people, that's how you listen to podcasts nowadays. Either one of those platforms, you can leave us a 5-star rating, which is amazing. We love that. Please do it. But if you're on the Apple Podcasting app, they give you the opportunity to write something along with it. It's like the multiple choice and the essay. We want the essay part because those can be really funny and you can talk trash to us as long as you leave us the only multiple choice answer that's correct is 5 stars. So just do that. Select E or whatever it is, 5 stars, all of them. We want those all lit up. And then write something about us. And so we're going to take the best reviews each week and give away a free Trader Joe's gift card or two. I've sent out a bunch recently, so keep sending them in. People just email me, ryan@usafootball.com, if you win. And I bought new stamps. Stamps are 72 cents, I believe, David.
This is the second time you have brought up the cost of stamps in, I think, 3 weeks on this show.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know. I wasn't sure because I just have some in my drawer, but I needed to buy more because I was sending a bunch of gift cards. And I asked the lady like that works at the post office, like how much are stamps now? Because they're forever stamps.
Whenever anybody asks you, like when you're deep into your 60s or 70s, when did you realize that you were turning into an old man? Remember this conversation.
Oh, it's happened.
Where for the second time in 3 weeks, you have complained about the cost of stamps.
Well, I'm not complaining about it. I just didn't know what it was.
Uh-huh.
But 72 cents, it's like, it seems like a lot for a stamp, but you know, whatever. But you never mail anything. And yet, you know, we used to mail checks like for your monthly phone bill. Mm-hmm. Like you'd put a check, you needed stamps more. Now you don't need that stuff. You just do everything online.
Do you enjoy our lifestyle podcast? Please click subscribe.
Yeah. We got another, I'm sorry, I didn't get the sound effect for the first super chat. West Texas Mike, two of himself, for Dylan Royola tiptoeing in the backfield like he was on, quote, Scooby-Doo without ever even bothering to fake a snap on that wasted fourth
down. We got to get into all that. Matt Rhule is maybe the dumbest person in the history of
that
the
was
world.
Pretty dumb.
He is dumber than you could possibly imagine.
Like two.
He's got a big dumb face. Have you looked at his face closely? He's just got kind of a confused dumb face all the time, and it really crystallized for me watching this stupid football game. Okay. Anyway, we'll get into that.
We got to get the reviews, and we're gonna pick our best ones. But Dylan from Albuquerque. Oh wait, let me pull it up again. Pull up the wrong one. Dylan from Albuquerque has a serious question. He submitted his review on Apple Podcasts on Thursday, November 7th, and still hasn't posted. Does that mean they flagged it and I got to resubmit a new one?
It might. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works.
I don't know their dynamics. I don't know what causes them to flag things. I mean, we've had people explicitly asking for money in those, and that doesn't get flagged, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you could be mean to us, but maybe if it was like, I'm going to go to your homes and murder you.
Yeah, I mean, if you were threatening a hate crime against us, I could see that getting flagged.
But I'm not sure what you wrote. But we'll look for it and stuff, too.
Yeah. All right. We got three new reviews. Okay. Ready for them?
Yep.
This is from John from NorCal. Great podcast. 5 stars. I love tuning in each week to listen to a 50-year-old surfer bro and the love child of Danny DeVito and Tim Walz talk about Big Ten football. Hang on. Do people think I'm short?
I don't know.
I've gotten this a lot. People think I'm short.
Do people think I surf? Because I don't surf.
Well, you're a beach guy. I can get that. I'm 6 feet tall. All right.
Are you really?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not Danny DeVito. I'm a little stocky, let's be real, but I'm 6 feet tall. All okay. right. David has the enthusiasm.
I think he's 5'8", but
yeah, 5'4". David has the enthusiasm of a DMV clerk, and his bald head shines brighter than any Big Ten trophy UCLA will ever win. I love listening to Ryan stutter into his microphone in between David's brain damage inducing rants before he goes home and gets drunk on wine coolers. Ryan looks like he'd rather eat glass than pretend to care about Big Ten juggernauts such as Iowa or Northwestern, whose most exciting plays on Saturday is a halfback dive that goes longer than 4 yards. If you're a Big Ten fan who's interested in hearing the analysis of your team by two sociopaths, this is the podcast for you.
It's pretty good.
That was pretty good. That's an early contender.
Yeah.
This is from Jesus Humberto Cristo.
Oh, I think he wins just with the name.
Yeah. Herocious. Longtime listener, first-time reviewer, this podcast has it all. From the dulcet tones of Ryan and Dave, Disney princesses, which team's coach would win in a fist fight, which mascot would win in a fist, paw, wing, sword fight, rankings of presidents from the absolute worst to fairly bad, to even the occasional appearance by the infamous Zodiac Killer. In addition to all of that, you also get a bit of football talk. Much like the rest of our Pac-12 brethren, minus the yucks, this podcast came to the Big Ten full of hope and promise only to realize that 3 yards in a cloud of dust really isn't that fun, and long multi-time zone flights are pretty terrible.
They are.
All kidding aside, these guys are great fun and help keep me sane while watching my beloved dogs urinate on themselves repeatedly. That was awesome.
They were herocious.
Since he gave the herocious line.
This is two that I think are both strong.
Yes.
All right, this is from Nick Bjork. Assuming this is on a 100-star scale, if you're a fan of travel logistics for football programs traveling at least 2 time zones, this is the podcast for you. Ryan and David are great. If nothing else, it's nice to have a place where fellow fans can commiserate the demise of the Pac-12. Keep up the good work, gents. Watch out for falling pianos. Always remember that our laziness is prescient. And Signetti kills.
Oh, I love that one, too. What are we going to do here?
I don't know. Do we do all three?
He gets the women. Signetti kills.
Do we do all three?
That's like, I mean, how many cents of stamps is that?
I know. That is... That is 144, 216 cents of stamps. That is $2.16 right. out of your pocket.
Let's do them all three. Let's all do right. all
Hell
three.
Hell yeah, baby.
So email me, ryan@uscfootball.com. We appreciate all of the reviews there, and I will send you a Trader Joe's gift card. Thanks to John and Brea. He gave me some. Well, I went in. So go in the Trader Joe's, by the way, if you're doing this. I know they don't sponsor us, but they've given us the gift cards. One of the things is look for those like kind of platinum reserve bottles of wine. Those are usually like good bottles of some other small winery that they can't sell. They need to put a different label on. And so it's like significantly cheaper. So if you like wine And there was a Pinot Noir that's like a $15 Pinot Noir that's probably like $50 in a steakhouse or something. Go check it out. It's like the Platinum Reserve or something. But I bought a few bottles of that. So just a little Trader Joe's cheat code there if you want. Go pick that up. You like wine at all or no?
Look, I think I've shared my thoughts on alcohol generally on this.
Oh, yeah, you don't like the taste, but you just...
Well, no, it's performing a function. Does wine perform that function?
It does.
Yes. So do I like it? Do I dislike it? Who knows? Does it perform the function? Does it get the job done? Absolutely.
Yeah. Matthew wants me to send him an empty envelope just so he can get a precious stamp for himself. Yeah. No, I'm not wasting
I'm going to share for the new listeners. If we were all drinking for things that taste good, we would all be imbibing delicious glasses of frosty, cold chocolate milk at all times. But we're not doing it for that reason. We're doing it to make our heads silly.
Yeah.
And so I think we need to be honest about that and stop talking about, oh, I love the taste of this floral IPA. No, you don't. No, you don't. You like chocolate milk, probably. This is something you tolerate to make your head kind of silly.
Where were you on the strawberry milk? Did you ever have that?
I've had it. I'm not a big strawberry milk guy.
It's pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
Chocolate milk's great, though.
Yeah.
Were you like a syrup or a powder?
You got to do syrup. Come on, man. What kind of game is this?
Well, the powder's pretty good, too. You got to like stir it a lot, though.
Yeah, the powder's tough.
Yeah.
You get kind of chalky.
You got to get the right ratio.
Yeah, it's important to get the ratio correct.
Yeah.
With the chocolate syrup, it's also important to get the ratio. You don't want to like drink chocolate syrup, which is what happens if you go a little heavy on it, you know?
Yes, there's a lot of that at the bottom of stuff. Okay.
I'm trying to teach my kids.
I want to tell.
Appropriate.
We got to recap all the games, but I want to let you guys know about my bookie. I've had some people emailing me about it, and they've had a good experience, so I'm glad for that. If you haven't signed up yet, you can use the promo code POC, and what they'll do is they'll match your deposit. So if you put in $100, they'll match it 100%. So you would have $200 to play with. And you could follow along with our picks. If you did follow along with David's picks, I'm sorry. Maybe just eat ramen this week because it wasn't a very good week for our friend.
Eat dog food.
You could eat some. Just eat dog food. He was 3-4 in his picks. I was 5-2. My first pick is always wrong for some reason. I'm going to look and see. Look at the doc, Dave, and see like when's the last time I got a first pick.
I'm not going to do that.
You're not going to do that?
No.
I'm doing the read. You can't look at the doc and tell me when the last time I got a first. The first game I get wrong all the time, and it was the UCLA-Washington game.
All right, I'm going.
Both David and I got it wrong.
Hang on.
Well, you can do that without me like pausing. The whole point is I'm going to talk while you're doing that in the background. Do you know how that works?
Last one you got right was week 5.
Holy crap.
And it was that Washington at Rutgers game that Washington should have won by like 2.5 touchdowns.
Oh, and I took Rutgers.
And you took Rutgers, and they covered in the most bullshit fashion.
Yeah, so I would fade my first pick, whatever the first game is, fade that. But then you can go with me the rest of the way. I'm now 57-50-1, so 7 games above 500. Dave dropped below 500 on the season. Not good, 53-54-1. But you can do whatever you want. Make your own picks. You could probably beat both of us over at my bookie. They also have the live casino option now, which is kind of fun. We talked about that. Dave and I both enjoy being in Vegas, being at the tables. You can do it right online at my bookie. You want to play a little baccarat? You want to play some blackjack? You can do that over there at my bookie. So make your picks for the game. Do you want to bet NFL? Whatever you want. The NBA is going. Hockey, you're degenerate. You like betting hockey? Go ahead. Do whatever you want. It's great. You can do it because you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at my bookie. Yeah. You're right.
That was beautiful.
Thanks. So I've realized that. I'm like, I always get the first game wrong. And it's hard to like, what, you know, the momentum can get going poorly if you get the first game wrong.
Did you just say the momentum of your picks?
Yes. There's momentum
that you make all at once.
Yeah. I get that. I got on a roll this one.
Thursday?
Yeah. Because I got the morning one right, and then I got the afternoon one right, and they were both against you. So then I had a lot of momentum, and it was only the last game that didn't pan out, but it was good.
Yeah.
I sent David a thing. I was texting him, like, because he likes to, like, if I have bad picks, he'll tweet it out usually. I usually just text him. Mm-hmm. I did do a tweet this time, but I was like, David, hey, I've been marking in bold whenever we get a pick right, but I haven't marked any of yours right yet. Like, is there a mistake? I wasn't sure what was wrong. It's like, oh, he was 0-3. So
yeah.
I thought that was pretty good.
I thought that was good.
Yeah, MyBookie. So go check it out. Promo code POC.
POC.
Yeah. So you had cut it to only two, I think only a two-game lead. Now it's back to like four or whatever. But we'll see. We'll see how we can finish the season. And hopefully both of us will be above 500 by the end. All right. Well, we got to do our countdown, correct?
Our roundup?
A roundup or countdown or like a countdown of the power ranking.
Isn't it a count up?
It's a count up. Okay. So first up, we've got our number 18 team.
Purdue Boilermakers.
They were hosting the number 4 team.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Yeah. I don't want to spend too much time on this one. Penn State went into Purdue. It went into West Lafayette, the hostile confines.
Yes.
And won by 39. And it wasn't that close. Like, this was heading into the fourth quarter. It was 42-3, I believe.
Yeah, they scored a little bit late.
Yeah. Drew Aller, how many incomplete passes did he have in this game, Ryan?
I don't know.
It was two. That is how many incomplete passes he threw in this game. There was absolutely no
resistance.
Is he like
the greatest quarterback ever? Or is just Purdue bad?
I mean, look, Drew Aller has had a better year than he's had in years past. So he's good.
He's playing better. But he's not
Purdue made him look like a god. Like, yeah, there was no resistance from Purdue. They were horrible in this game. And Penn State did whatever they wanted. Tyler Warren led Penn State in rushing.
Yeah, that's good.
With 63 yards, which is a hell of a thing to do on a team that includes both Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen. But yeah, Tyler Warren and Bo Prabula actually were the two leading rushers for Penn State.
Which is funny.
Bo Prabula being, of course, their backup quarterback who comes in wildcat situations. Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to take from this. Purdue's horrible. Penn State is good. But I will say Penn State has played not down to its competition, but hasn't been willing a lot of times to just step on a team's throat and like just completely suffocate them. They did that in this one. Like,
they were throat stepping on.
We're going to kill you and you're going to die. And they killed them and then they died by the end of the first half.
Yeah, if you watching the game, if Joe Montana and Tom Brady had like a love child, it would have been Drew Aller for this game. He couldn't miss. It was amazing. No, it's just Penn State was just they're a good team, and Purdue is not. They've not been scoring points. That one game, right? They scored 49 after they fire Graham Harrell, and the defensive minded head coach calls the plays. It's not worked out much since then. I was watching, so it's 28-3, and Penn State's just driving. Drew Aller drops back, and there's literally a dude that looks like he's receiving a punt in the end zone. Like, there's nobody near him. He just throws this lofty pass. Boom. It's like, okay. It literally looked like he caught a punt. And then it's 35-3, and we've got this right. The spread was 28.5, and they're covering at that point. You're like, okay, that's cool. And you're like, well, you need to score another one just to make some separation. You weren't worried about the cover at all, but there was one of those incompletions, this another receiver streaking by himself all alone. Drew Aller hits him perfectly. It just goes doink and just bounces off of him. And you're like, what happened there? They put in Prabula the next play and he runs for 49 yard touchdown. Like the very next, like literally dropped the touchdown pass. You're like, oh man, what a blown opportunity. And the backup quarterback just runs for 49 yards in the very next play for a touchdown. So that was the kind of way it was going. Like, even when something like good happens for Purdue, it's like, oh, they were just about to get a 49-yard touchdown. Well, they got one the very next play. It's when that's kind of happening, you know, it's going to be a long
day. Somebody brought this up in the chat, but did you see the Purdue receiver? I think it was Denylan Morissette catch what he thought was a touchdown in the back of the end zone, but he was actually like 2 yards behind the end zone when he caught the ball.
That was amazing. One of the coolest things about like the athleticism of football players is the awareness,
the body control.
When you're doing
situational
this
awareness,
kind of stuff with your, and you're somehow your feet are tapping to try to make it in. This was like just standing in, you know, like there's lava here and a sidewalk. You just stand in the lava like, yeah, oh, crap, you know. That was the weirdest thing.
Yeah, it's when they – because so much of what they do seems inhuman that when something happens and you're like, that's me out there. Like, that's what would have happened if I was – because I don't want to be where, like, all the defenders are, like, hitting right. people. I'm going to be back here, and I'll just catch the ball. That's fine. Yeah. Yeah. No, not so much.
Pretty, yeah, Kyle pointed that out in the chat. Thanks, Kyle.
Anyway, yeah, Purdue has a pretty good chance of finishing 1-11.
They bad. Yeah. They bad. All right. Another pretty bad team. Number 17, we have
Maryland Terrapins.
Snap, 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 snap. They're snapping, snapping, snapping. They were taking, this is one of those games where you're like, hey, I don't know, could it be a coin flippy kind of thing. They were hosting
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
Yeah, the Rutgers resurgence is real. Rutgers went into Maryland and won 31-17. Kyle Manungai was back for this game.
Yeah, that's good.
So that helped. He didn't, you know, look maybe 100%, but he was back. But Ethan Kalikmanis continues to look like a decent quarterback.
Yeah.
The way we maligned him. We owe him many apologies, but he was really efficient in this game. Maryland, I don't know what's going on, but they're throwing the ball way too much. Billy Edwards threw the ball 55 times in this game.
That's a lot of times.
They only ran the ball 25 times, and that includes 7 runs for Billy Edwards, a few of which were scramble sack situations. And it wasn't like they weren't running it well. They averaged almost 5 yards per carry, but it was just we're throwing the ball.
Yeah.
And Billy Edwards is not super efficient. 335 yards on 55 passes is not great. He also threw a pick. But yeah, Maryland, again, when we're contextualizing Maryland's back half of the season, it's really WTF with the USC game. But otherwise, it's just been losing and losing pretty bad. I think, you know, after they beat USC, because there was a lot of talk right after Northwestern, they need to get rid of Mike Locksley. This needs to happen. But then they beat USC, and then it was like, oh, yeah. Now they've lost 3 straight, all 3 by double digits. This one at home, like, I mean, this one, it's not as much of a devastator as Northwestern at home when they lost by 27 points. But it is like Rutgers had been reeling until very recently. Like, this should have been a winnable game. Vegas odds makers had it at Maryland -5.5.
Yeah. I think we picked it. It was -6.5.
I mean, now they have no shot at a bowl game this year. And there's a very good chance they finish 4-8. I mean, they've got to play Iowa at home next week. Iowa can beat them.
Of course.
Though there's some news on Iowa. Brendan Sullivan is likely out for the rest of the year with an ankle injury. So they might.
Boo.
If Cade McNamara is still dealing with a concussion, they might be down to that guy who's like a scout team linebacker playing quarterback. But then it's at Penn State. Like, they are not going to a bowl game. And now it's a question of how bad is the final record going to be? So I don't know. I mean, this could be circling the drain a little bit.
Yeah. We both had Rutgers +6.5 and, felt pretty good about it. And Rutgers wins going away by double digits, like you mentioned. Yeah, I thought Maryland threw the ball way too much in this one. But they just, outside of that USC game, they just seem like they struggle. They're struggle bus in Big Ten play. I mean, that's their only conference win, and so it's pretty crazy of what's going on here. I have no idea why Maryland was a favorite. We saw Rutgers play pretty well the week before with a backup running back. Right?
Rutgers would have had to be favored by like 6 in this game for me not to take Rutgers.
Yeah, so it was like that swing. Yeah. You didn't get a lot of games right, but this was one you did.
Well, this one was, yeah, I mean, this one you just kind of sniff out. If you're paying any attention to Rutgers and, like, they're getting healthier again, they looked a lot better last week. Greg Schiano, for all the criticisms of him as an NFL coach, he's a pretty good, like, developer of a program. So you had to feel good about them bouncing back after a bye week, too.
Yeah. All right. So there are 2 pretty bad teams down there. Unfortunately, we've got to put this one next. Number 16.
Northwestern Wildcats.
They were hosting our number 3 team in Wrigley Field.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
My man Chip Kelly screwed me so hard in this game.
He did?
Yeah, because I had Ohio State covering, you had Northwestern.
Oh, yes.
All Ohio State had to do was just keep scoring, just score one more touchdown. And what did they spend the fourth quarter doing? Dicking around.
Yeah. It was 7-0. It was 7-0 Northwestern. Around. It was 7-0 Northwestern. I'm like, oh, this is good. This is good for my cover.
Yeah. And then they just sat on them. Yeah. yeah. I mean, Ohio State's defense is excellent. And they started to make Jack Lausch's life a little bit miserable after essentially the first quarter. Northwestern had a really good drive. I mean, essentially, this game, game could have gone slightly differently. But at the end of their first drive, Lausch fumbled it. And it was this crazy fumble where it bounces out of his hand, bounces on the ground, and directly into the waiting arms of an Ohio State defender. But that was on the Ohio State 18. Like, it was, oh.
They could, yeah.
They had driven so far. Then they score on the next drive, and it's like, oh, okay. They've got a game plan. They know what's going on. And then from there on, it was pretty much all Ohio State. There was a horrible special teams play that set Ohio State up with a really short field. I think it was a terrible punt. Is that what it was? No. It was a fumble. Yeah. Okay. And Ohio State had literally a first and goal at the Northwestern one to start a drive. Mm. That's not good.
No,
that's not good.
That was the only turnover of the game, I think, right?
Yeah. And then there was another turnover on downs to start the second quarter. So it wasn't as if Northwestern couldn't move the ball, but it was just they couldn't quite get over the hump. There is a different world where this game was like neck and neck deep into the third quarter, and it just that didn't materialize. There was a little something to, I think, Ohio State just kind of managing their players and their snaps. You know, you saw like heavy rotations at running back and various things. But I don't know. Northwestern played decently. It's not, you know, it's 7 points doesn't look good, but it's not like they were completely killed. I just really wish Chip Kelly didn't hate me so much.
He does.
I hate him, but I wish he didn't hate me so much.
Matthew says, Chip knows. Yeah, this was the second game in a row we talked about where both teams only had 9 drives. I think that's one of the things you have to sort of get used to. Like Penn State, I forget how many they had, but they were able to score more consistently. When you're trying to cover a huge spread like this, it can't be 0-0 at the end of the first quarter, and then Northwestern scores the first one. So you're just kind of in a hole, but there was only 9 drives in this game for each team. So to cover, what do we have the spread at? It was
28.5.
28.5, like in this one, too. It didn't have the same feel like as the Penn State-Purdue one, because Purdue seemed dead, lifeless, and Northwestern was like a little, you know, they had some life to them. And like I said, that bad turnover, it could have been a little closer than this, but I think Ohio State's obviously in control, but it wasn't going to be one of those games where they're just – touchdown, 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 and you're going to cover the spread. So way to go, Northwestern at Wrigley. Did you see Wrigley? What did you think?
I think it's a stupid place to play a football game.
Yeah, it didn't seem the best.
Yeah.
I don't know. But see, someone pointed out in the chat there was a lot of Ohio State fans that were there. So, which, you know, that checks out. That makes sense. Okay, so next one we had, let's see, who is up next? We have number 15.
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
They were on the road taking on number 5.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
Yeah, this ended up being a beatdown. Illinois won 38-16. That's not really the way the game felt through, I don't know, a half, three quarters even. Piled on a little bit late because Michigan State was trying to score, so they were turning it over on downs, and those were turning into Illinois touchdowns. It was a reasonably close game early. I think the final stats kind of bear it out that this was not some major blowout. But I think the big thing for me was that Michigan State's defense wasn't able to hold down this Illinois offense that has been.
They haven't been good.
They haven't been great. But Luke Altmyer looked like beginning of the season Luke Altmyer again. And most importantly, that Illinois running game finally got going again a little bit. And I think if you can be balanced and you can move the ball on the ground against Michigan State, I just don't think the talent level is high enough yet under Jonathan Smith, or their schemes are not, you know, fully integrated with these guys yet, that they're able to overcome that. Aiden Childs, I didn't think was bad in this game. I mean, there were some plays where I'm like, oh man, you got to get that ball out quicker, but he didn't make any critical mistakes. There weren't any turnovers from Childs in this one. So I thought he was fine. It's just they couldn't punch it in. They couldn't get it in the end zone. Too many field goals. And they missed an extra point, I want to say, in this one.
I think in the first quarter, yeah.
Yeah, and then, it was one field goal. But it was just moving the ball pretty well and then turning it over on downs. Moving the ball pretty well, turning it over on downs. But, yeah, I mean, I think for Michigan State, this was looking like potential bowl season early on. They still have a decent chance at it, but they have to win out now. Purdue at home, that should be a win next week. But then it's Rutgers at home, and Rutgers is kind of surging a little bit. So we'll see on that one. But it's been a tough stretch. They've lost 6 of 7 now, but in those Ooh. 6 of 7 included all of Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, and then Illinois and Michigan. Like, they've had a really tough schedule.
Yeah.
So if they can close strong, if they can, you know, kind of maintain, their head screwed on straight, a bowl game is still possible.
Yeah, I think the score, I mean, Illinois scored 14 points, you know, in the fourth there to kind of put some distance. And we had, what was the spread here? It was Illinois by 2.5. I had Illinois. You took Michigan State. If you would have told me before the game that Michigan State wasn't going to turn the ball over, I might have, you know, considered, hey, this is going to be close.
Yeah, I was stunned. I thought Michigan State's defense would show up a lot better, and they just, it didn't quite happen.
Yeah, they couldn't run the ball, really. Illinois ends up getting 3 rushing touchdowns, I believe. But really, just when it was sort of more of an even game without the big mistakes, Illinois converted 8 of 15 third downs and 1 on fourth. And Michigan State was only 2 of 15. So they were getting off the field. They had to go for it on fourth down 6 times, and they missed a couple of them late, like you were talking about. So they were 4 of 6 on fourth down. But not being able to sort of move the sticks and keep drives going, I think that's what really hurt Michigan State. It wasn't the big turnover, the big mistake. It's just they weren't able to execute on some of those important downs. So, but Illinois did, you know, and I thought they, you know, he played really well, got the ground game going a little bit. It was sort of like an even, there wasn't the big special teams play that went one way or the yeah. other. It was just straight up football, and Illinois executed on third down, and Michigan State did.
So looking at post-game win expectancy, kind of the feel of it is a little bit correct. They won by 22, but it was more like a 2-touchdown game. Like, it should have been like a 14-point game.
Even like 10, maybe, you
yeah,
could have said.
Which feels right. That feels closer to right. But yeah, they comfortably covered. And I think if you're hoping for Illinois to finish out this year strong, finish at 9-3, this is a really good sign, because Illinois had looked kind of broken coming into this one. So they got right.
Yeah, this was a, you know, Michigan State was sort of like, there's life, but then there's like, they could drop off. And this was concerning to me that they didn't get the big mistakes from Aiden Childs, and they weren't really super competitive. So that's about, usually when they lose, it's because, oh my God, 2 picks and a fumble, you know, and just where you throw the ball backwards when you're trying to pass. That wasn't the case in this game, and still got beat pretty bad. Okay, number 14 we've got.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
Shocker, they were another 1-score game in the Coliseum, taking on our number 10 team.
USC Trojans.
Shocker that they lost another 1-score game, because that's all
it's kind
they
of what
do.
They do.
That's
yeah.
all they do. USC won 28-20. Look, there's a ton to take away from this game. Both teams were breaking out new things, which you rarely see in the 10th game of the year for two teams who have not dealing with injuries. USC was starting a new quarterback, Jaden Maiava, and Nebraska was trotting out a new offensive coordinator in Dana Holgorsen. Let's start on the Nebraska side. I do think there were some benefits that were obvious from having Holgorsen as the offensive coordinator. There was some more simplification.
Yeah.
Dylan Raiola still had moments where he looked completely lost and absolutely no idea where to go with the ball. But he was hitting quick stuff a lot better than he was against UCLA the last time we saw him. Like, there were these quick in routes that he was hitting well. I don't know why he throws them like he's throwing a deep bomb where it's like lofted, but he was hitting them. He should be lasering those, but he was hitting them. And yeah, looked a little bit more decisive. I think things were simplified for him, which is good because I think he had the classic like kind of paralysis by analysis where he didn't know what was going on against UCLA. This game he was better. He still threw a couple of picks, but it wasn't the disaster show that it was against UCLA, so you'll take it. And then I thought the running game looked a bit better too. And you got to consider that USC's got a pretty good and well-schemed defense, so to run the ball relatively effectively against them is an accomplishment. I think Emmett Johnson kind of came alive in this one. Dante Dowdell, he had a couple good runs, but then it just seems like he's looking for contact every time he runs the ball, and he's not looking for open space, just looking for contact. So I think offensively they're in the process of getting fixed. Like, I think you're running into some freshman quarterback things, and I think, you know, you might be well served. I don't know how it works with the freshmen. You might be well served by just putting in Harburg for trying to get back to bowl eligibility in one of these games, just to stabilize the decision making there, because Rael is still running into stuff where it's just like, man, you got to get rid of the ball. You got to make a better choice there.
Yeah.
So there was that. USC, if you didn't watch the game and you are simply consulting the stats, you say to yourself, Jaden Maiava, man, he really did some things out there. God damn, he's really good. If you watch the game, I think a full four and maybe five of his completions, and I don't want to put this too strongly, but I think all four or five should have been picked off by Nebraska.
Very well could have been, yes.
So there was one that was down the right sideline to Deuce Robinson where the Nebraska player literally has his hands like this. I'm holding them as if I am catching the ball.
Yeah.
And it goes right over his forefinger as Deuce Robinson is having to run back from the end zone to come catch this wildly underthrown ball.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
Then there was another one in the end zone where, again, the Nebraska corner has his hands like this. And I literally think the ball went through his hands. Like, I just didn't bring them close enough. And it ends up being a touchdown. Then there were several plays where the ball bounced off either the USC receiver or the Nebraska corner and then bounced back to the other person and then bounced back into the USC receiver's hands.
I think that was the Mekhi Lemon one.
There were at least two.
He got hit. Rael got hit as he was throwing.
Yes, he was not intending to throw it to him.
He was not intending to throw it to, and it hit the Nebraska guy in the helmet, I think, and then Lemon catches it like for a first down.
Correct. This happened over and over and over again. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen. This was the most insane 28-20 game you can imagine. But Maiava, like, there were some advantages. His ability to run the ball kind of as expected, I think, opened some things up. He was able to run for a touchdown. There were a couple of plays where he was able to make something happen with his legs. There was also a play where I believe he fumbled because he was trying to make something happen with his legs. Correct?
Yeah. No, there was the one, he fumbled like scrambling and then looked, try to take off and wasn't holding the ball.
Yeah.
And it gets batted away. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was bad. But for the most part, he anyway, best of luck to USC with Jaden Maiava. Woody Marks is really good. Once again, yeah, he ran the ball 19 times, and I felt it was about 10 times too few. there were stretches in this game where it's like, oh, Lincoln, remember that guy. Put the ball in his hands. And I know he's dinged up right now, but he's a really special player. I mean, Nebraska had a chance to take this one. I think it, you know, given that they didn't pick off any of those balls, it's probably a little bit of a danger sign for USC that Nebraska was in position to win this game at any point in the second half.
Yeah.
Because everything was kind of going against Nebraska. Like, all these bang-bang plays were going against them, and they were still in position to take this one late when it should have probably been, like, a 17-point game.
Yeah, like, USC started off pretty slow, and they throw that pick six, and Nebraska gets a lot of momentum there. But I think
that was the worst, like, one of the worst picks I've ever seen.
And it was, you know who picked it off?
Yes, you're right, baby.
Former USC
Jordan. Who also blocked a kick.
So the dude... And he, like, got a penalty out of Zachariah, I think it was Zachariah Branch or something that he was like jarring with, and Zachariah Branch gets a penalty on that one. But yeah, I think in general, I like the way the Nebraska offense looked a little better, but unfortunately, I mean, they really only scored 10 real points. They got a turnover in field goal range, and then they got a pick six. So the theme for Nebraska these last, now it's four games, they've only averaged 14 points a game in these last four games that they've lost, and they needed to sort of step that up in the Coliseum. They weren't able to do it. So the USC defense got a little help with Jalen Smith was back. He was out a couple games. Kamari Ramsey was back. Smith ends up getting an interception, and Ramsey's just one of those guys that makes open field tackles that USC hasn't had before. So I thought the defense, USC's defense, played pretty well.
Having Ramsey back was huge.
It helped them a lot. And then offensively, this kind of went, I thought it was going to be 28-21 or something. Like, this is pretty much went like the right the way.
I predicted 27-20 in my picks column, but the line had dropped to, what did it drop to? USC minus 7.5. So I missed it, despite my absolute error being one single point.
It's great. Well, we took USC plus 9.5 in this one. So we covered, we ended up getting the cover. Both of us got the cover for this one. But yeah, Maiava, I think he did settle down a little bit, but he can put the ball in harm's way. But I was talking about this on our Tunnel Vision show last night. It's like, if you're a poker player, it's way better to be the aggressor than being sort of passive. And he's forcing the issue. So yeah, you're going to get some balls that maybe were in harm's way, but you've made the play happen. And I think that's going to be a benefit for them. That, yes, you can make a bunch of mistakes too, but he's actually sort of forcing things to happen. You got to take care, you know, watch him with his legs. They picked up a 4th-and-1 that, you know, I don't think they would have picked up with Miller Moss just because he's got that threat to run. But he
I like the aggression.
Yeah.
He should have had at least 2 or 3 more balls picked off, and that flips this game to a loss. Like, yes, there's aggressive to a point, but this game I think is a little bit of fool's gold unless he substantially improves his decision making going forward. And he will. I mean, he's still very young. He's still very new in his college career, but there were a lot of just, don't throw that ball.
There was, they talked about this beginning. Matthew says, go off on rule, please.
Sorry. I messed up because I've got to talk about the world's dumbest football coach.
That's saying something coming from you because you think they're all dumb gym teachers, but yes.
All right. So there was a point in the fourth quarter. Nebraska is down by a single point. The ball is at the Nebraska 40. It's a 4th-and-3. Now, at this point in the game, it was 10 minutes and 31 seconds to go. USC had driven it twice in 3 drives for scores, or nearly scores. They had a missed field goal. One was a touchdown, and then the other play was a fumble. It was that fumble for Maiava. But they've been moving the ball decently well. So fairly justified to go for it there, because you feel like you've kind of lost momentum. You feel like, okay, we were in position, but you know they could run away with this one. So we gotta go for it. But if you want to punt, I'm not completely out on the idea of punting there. It's on your own 40. If you want to punt that away, fine. I mean, it's kind of on the conservative end of things, but it's fine. But what can you not do? You can't spend a timeout. Sorry, Griffin, earmuffs. You can't spend a fucking timeout. To then set up looking like you're going to go for it, right?
Yeah.
And you're got your quarterback out there, and he doesn't even snap the ball. He doesn't go up to the line of scrimmage for a hard count. He just kind of tap dances around, moves around a little bit, and then they take a delay of game. They call the timeout to take a delay of game. Mm. You know what you could have just done? Take the delay of game. So instead of having 3 timeouts at the end of the game, they have 2. But that ends up not mattering. You want to know why? Because on their final drive, down 28-20, they have worlds of time. 2 minutes and 45 seconds. The 2-minute warning's coming up. They've still got 2 timeouts. You're like, this is going to be fine. What do? They spend the entire time throwing like 1-yard passes. They get to midfield on a run to take a first down, right? And it's 40. Let's get the time right. There are 40 seconds left when they get the first down at the USC 48. So they've got two timeouts at this point, right? And they've just had to run the ball for the first down.
Yes.
What do you do in that situation? You call a timeout. Mm. Why? Because 40 seconds from midfield is not great. And you know it's worse than 40 seconds from midfield? 30 seconds from midfield, which is what's going to happen by the time you set up for your next play.
Yeah.
But they don't call a timeout. Mm. So it's 31 seconds. And they throw like a little like dinky 1 yard out to the sideline. And it's like, okay, you have 31 seconds now from the 48. You have essentially four plays maybe from there, and they've all got to be good to get yourself in range where they can't just set up in a prevent. They don't do any of that. They set up in a prevent. Game is over.
Yeah.
Horrible clock management. They end up calling a timeout first and 10 at the USC 14 when the ball had already gone out of bounds. So the only time they used a timeout appropriately in this second half was never. Like, they never actually used it to stop the clock, to handle the clock in any way. Matt Rhule is so stupid. And then in the first half, there were several, I want to say, fourth down decisions where he's just like, nah, we're punting it away. It's like fourth and one at midfield, and they punted it away. Mm. Just bone stupid.
Piano heads.
It's like, I want to lose close. I don't want to win the game. I want to lose close. I don't want to risk the possibility of losing big. I want to lose close. I think he's been... I had an impression of him as a coach. I never watched him in the NFL. It's one of these situations where I think NFL brain disease got him bad. And he's like, oh, I don't want ownership and media to complain about my decisions, so I'm just going to do the most conservative, boneheaded shit possible. But Nebraska, I think it was deeply unfortunate because I think you were let down by the luck gods in some ways, but then also your head coach massively mismanaged this game.
Yeah, he said afterwards, like, they were looking to a fake punt, but USC came out in like a punt safe or something. But that's the case. Like, okay, so you're going to go out there, going to be a fake punt. If it's not there, take the delay a game or whatever you want, or just punt it away. You know, you don't need to do the whatever song and dance timeout. And it took a lot of time too. And you're just like, what is going on here? Like, just go for it or punt. Like, I mean, fake punt's fine. And if they're in punt safe and it's not going to work, then just punt it away. Or if you're going to call a timeout, then go for it, right? Like, you know.
Fake punts are, fake punt is fine. But the way you should, I mean, the way you do fake punts is you line up in a look. And if you don't get the look you want, you just punt it.
Yeah.
But you don't do that at that point in the game. Like, if you're going to go for it, go for it. Anything's going to be suspicious in the fourth quarter when you're down.
Yeah.
Just go for it.
Yeah, people were saying, like,
put your offense out there and go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. Again, it's just stupid stuff. Just this, he's got that big, dumb face. You know his big, dumb face?
Big, dumb face.
It's a big, dumb face.
Okay, so that was Nebraska. Next one, we've got our number 13 team.
Wisconsin Badgers.
They were hosting the number one team,
Oregon Ducks.
Everything but the finish for Wisconsin. God damn. Oregon won 16-13. They escaped. This was 13-6 entering the fourth quarter. Dylan Gabriel, they shut down that short passing game in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Wisconsin did. It made it really, really hard on him. He rallied late, but this was a real struggle for most of the game. Oregon was able to run the ball. Wisconsin let down late by, I mean, frankly, just a lack of quarterback play. I mean, it was a huge part of this one. They were also just... They did fire Phil Longo, correct?
They did. They fired him. Third consecutive loss. They scored 13, you know, when they could have won this game. So they fired Phil Longo. So he gone.
Yeah. I mean, 28 pass attempts for 96 yards. That's...
How many yards?
96 for Braden Locke.
Passing.
There were moments this season where
Braden... 1 of 12 on third down, by the way.
Yeah.
Wisconsin. Holy crap.
There were moments this season where Braden Locke looked okay, but that hasn't been for a few weeks now. He's looked a little shell-shocked out there in this game. I think the moment got a little big for him, especially in the fourth quarter. But Oregon, man, they came shockingly close to losing this game. did you like the fake field goal from our friend?
No,
our friend Lan Danning.
That didn't work. I was like, oh wow, Wisconsin has life again. Like, well, if they had an offense, they'd have life, but they did not.
Yeah. It was, I
maybe
mean,
maybe that's part of the reason why they're like, hey, they're not going to score. So let's do something funny. And, cause even if we give it up, even if we don't get it, they're not going to score.
Yeah. Wisconsin,
one of our defensive linemen will make an interception on the very next play.
Yeah. Wisconsin really had nothing doing in the second half at all offensively. And you know, you got to credit Oregon's defense. I mean, I think they bowed up when they needed to, considering, the offense was just not at its usual capabilities. But, yeah, I mean, went into a tough environment. I was kind of like kicking myself because preseason I had predicted Wisconsin to win this game. But kind of like the Penn State game, they just couldn't quite finish it
they
in
were
the second
in
half.
It.
Yeah, in it, but couldn't finish it. But yeah, I mean, this was pretty miserable offensive performance for both teams. But both defenses, I thought, like, they did what they needed to do, just let down by offensive play. But Oregon's now 11-0. They survived a very tough test. Now they have to beat Washington, which we'll get to them in a second. And they'll be 12-0. That's pretty good for the first year in the Big Ten.
11 straight wins. You don't. This is not like our Dylan Gabriel line of, you know, 22 of 31. That's not kind of what he does. 7 yards per attempt. So it was a little bit of a struggle. But the fact that Oregon's defense just never let Wisconsin convert on third down, it was just like, oh, they could convert this one. No, they just never were converting. 1 of 12 is just pathetic. And, you know, you can see why Longo was fired. But I think, you know, good teams, you got to win what our friends at Solid Verbal say. You got to win your clunkers. This was a clunker for sure. A tough environment. You're getting punched in the mouth. Very different than the Mike Tyson fight where there wasn't a lot of punching going on. And you were able to come out and get a victory. But if Wisconsin had anything sort of going, like you just save something in your bag of tricks to get like, hey, this is a play we need to just get. We need to get over the
top. I mean,
they
couldn't even get first downs in the second half.
It was so bad.
Like every time. And I'm like, you know, I got to a point where, okay, I predicted Oregon, but I'm rooting for chaos. So I'm fully in the bag for Wisconsin in the second half. And then I'm like, but they're not doing anything.
No.
Like, they can't move the ball at all.
Once I figured out Oregon wasn't going to cover, I was like, this would be fun to see an upset there. Yeah. But there was just no that just wasn't in the cards. So, the Ducks survive. Wisconsin trying to figure something out, you know, fire your offensive coordinator and move on from
How
there.
How cool was that pick to end the game, though?
That was like the Ungulale one.
Like he was fully engaged, and then he had to completely disengage and pirouette to pick that ball off.
Yeah, it's pretty.
That was insane athleticism.
Pretty athletic play.
Yeah, he was a baller at the end of this game. By the way, that dude rocks.
Yeah. Okay. We got our number 12 team,
Michigan Wolverines.
Scratch. They were on a bye.
Beautiful.
We already talked about Rutgers at 11. We talked about USC at 10. Let's go to number 9.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
This was the Friday night game. They're up at number 8.
Washington Huskies.
Yeah, UCLA's winning streak came to an end on the road in Seattle. They lost 31-19 to Washington. Really funny final score, considering this game was not, it was not that. It was maybe that margin, but it was a lot lower scoring. This was some late stuff that made it go over, I think, actually, on the over-under. UCLA, I mean, really the story of this one was UCLA just critical mistakes over and over and over again that just put this one wildly out of reach. I think Washington played decently. I don't think they played great. They didn't play their A game, but UCLA played its D game, maybe. Starting off, Brody Richter, UCLA's punter, who's been very good this year. He had two balls go off the side of his foot, I think, in the first quarter.
I think consecutive punts.
Yes.
Consecutive horrible punts.
One of which set, yeah, one of which set Washington up, I think, on the UCLA 35
yeah,
for a touchdown.
Or 36 or something, yeah.
So field position decisively lost simply because he decided to kick it off the side of his foot. Ethan Garbers, I thought, was extremely shaky again. He turned the ball over within field goal range on a strip fumble where he should have just been eating a sack because your clock's got to be going off. If you're a fifth-year senior, when you're standing there and you can feel pass rush coming at you, you can't put the ball in jeopardy. You can't hold it down here to begin throwing. You've just got to run it, reposition yourself, do something. He's just standing stationary. He gets stripped. And then he threw four more balls at least that should have been picked. It was like Jaden Maiava status, where it just hit guys in the hands and it bounced off them. He was really shaky. Again, not quite kind of shown in the final stats. Very shaky game for him.
Yeah.
Tight end Jack Peterson running it in to the Washington 20 at one point, dives forward to try to get just one more yard, fumbles. So that's two drives where UCLA was in scoring position where they fumbled it away. And then, critically, on a score early for Washington, their second touchdown, they pick it off in the end zone. But Femi Oladejo, UCLA's edge rusher, hits Will Rogers late, well after he's released the ball.
Yeah.
Like, the ball is gone. It's going to be picked. But he hits him late. He was trying to pull up, but he did take his helmet and hit him in the butt, basically. So that wiped an interception off. So, like, just looking at those swings, and it's not as if Washington didn't turn the ball over themselves, but all of their turnovers were midfield, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of where you're like, well, it's essentially a punt, right? You're not turning it over in a scoring opportunity. But UCLA wiped away, taking a touchdown off for Washington, created a touchdown for Washington with their horrible punt, and then had two scoring drives wiped away because of fumbles. It's just critical mistakes and the level of discipline of this team. There were so many false starts in this game. You know, that whole Deshaun Foster DRE thing, discipline, respect, and enthusiasm.
Wasn't a lot of that, yeah.
No discipline.
Maybe some respect and enthusiasm.
I still don't really understand what respect means in that context. Isn't respect like...
Respect my authority.
Respect just feels like it's a recapitulation of discipline. I think the big problem for Deshaun Foster in year one, you need a third pillar that's distinct. If you can just get a different letter in there, I don't know what it would be. Just make sure that one's distinct, and I think it'll be gangbusters, 10-2. Washington was... Will Rogers, man. He's not very good. He threw two interceptions in this one, both of which were not good. He was shaky in his decision making. I'm not sure how much it aided him the previous week to be pulled, but I don't think he regained his confidence.
Yeah.
And then Damon Williams came in and was a stud again. UCLA didn't know how to defend him.
I don't know how anyone. He looked like a video game out there.
Yeah. I don't.
He was just like. Like this jitterbugging everywhere.
When he came in the first half, UCLA, it felt like they had a plan for him. But then they adjusted to what Washington was doing. They were doing a lot of screen stuff. And once they had adjusted to the screen stuff, it felt like Damon Williams suddenly had lanes. Like they were, I don't know, they were like doing hard flat stuff. And so he had a lane like in between the linebacker and the defensive line over and over and over again. But yeah, he was impossible to defend in the second half, which is why they scored two late touchdowns, because he was really good out there. But there's an alternate universe where UCLA had cleaned up all of its stuff and played a competitive game and maybe even won, but that was not in this one.
Yeah, just watching, you feel like UCLA could have been the better team, but it just, when, you know, teams are going to shoot themselves in the foot, and it can like, oh, I injured my toe, or you have a bazooka and you blow your leg off. And that's what, every time UCLA made a mistake, it seems
like. The title of my story after the game was UCLA shoots itself in foot with a cannon against Washington.
That's so funny. Yes. There was like an old engineering thing. It was like a program language thing. It was like C++ or something. And there was a thing that was like, well, if you shoot yourself in the foot with this language, it's like blowing your, it was something along those lines. I forget what it was. So any nerds in there, you might know what it is, but that's what it felt like to me, that UCLA's mistakes were super critical. You talk about the two interceptions. I think they were in the second half. Each time UCLA gets the ball, One of them led to like a field goal, and then one they fumbled away. It's like you had these opportunities to get back in the game. Washington's handing you the ball, and you just blow it. You just can't do anything with it. So the red zone, I think, was really questionable. UCLA did get a touchdown right before half. But outside of that, every time they got in the red zone, it was bad. And Washington's defense is known for great pass defense, but they played pretty good run defense against UCLA in this one, too. It's just, it looked like Washington's defense was feisty. And then once, backup quarterback comes in and he just sort of makes things happen, UCLA didn't really have any answers. And so there was opportunities, I think, until Washington made that quarterback switch, and then UCLA didn't know what to do. But I think UCLA had a lot of opportunities to take the lead in this game, and they just weren't able to do it. They just kept making mistakes when they would get a stop or trying to score. They just kept screwing it up.
Yep.
Okay. So we got that one. That was UCLA Washington. Number seven, we have
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
And they were on a bye. I love that one. This is my favorite one. Number six.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
So good. They're on a bye. So they don't have much going on. Illinois, we talked about. Penn State, we talked about. Yeah, we talked about everybody else. Right? Oh, and we have number two.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
Even on a bye.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
And he got the money.
That's right, baby.
Did we talk about that already? The extension?
Yeah. No, we haven't. We haven't.
Oh. He got his extension.
Yeah. $8 million a year.
Pretty good.
For what, 6 years?
I think it's eight, maybe.
Oh, wow.
But look, yeah, pretty impressive. And there's a lot of people talking like, is this going to lock him up? And his quote was something about I forget what it was, like making them a superpower or emerging superpower or something like that. I kind of think he's going to stay there. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it benefits Indiana that he is 63.
Yeah.
So it basically would swing one of two ways. One is he wants to go, have a chance at an elite program before, this clock's up. But if you're already building the thing there, and you've got the commitments that you need from donors and boosters, because again, their NIL situation is a lot better than you'd think for Indiana.
Yeah.
Why not? You've already built it. Like they're 10-0. They're heading into the biggest game in Indiana football history, maybe. Yeah. This Saturday, which we'll get into because Ohio State's somehow favored by double digits.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
They're the losingest program, whatever. They have the most losses in FBS history. I think Mark Cuban is involved in their NIL. Okay, so like that helps to have like this billionaire who loves sports to be involved. Ask Oregon. It does help. He is older. And I think he's the kind of guy that he's not going to say, James Madison, I'm going to win a national championship, but he didn't need to be at Ohio State for him to think he could win a national championship. And it's almost like, if I can do this in Indiana, like it looks better than if I took the Alabama job and did it there.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's sort of his killer mentality. Like, yes, I'm not gonna take James Madison and win a championship, but I could do it with Indiana. And like, if you're comfortable there and you're a little bit older, you don't want to really, you're not like job hopping just to try to find the, let's make this blue blood work. There's challenges of going to a blue blood, and we've seen it,
Yeah.
So my gut is, and no inside information, that he stays.
Yep.
So we'll see. All right. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back. We got to do our mythical Pac-12 ranking stuff, but we'll be back in a minute, everyone. All righty. We're back here on the Podcast of Champions. Let's go through our mythical Pac-12 power rankings. There's been some movement. I did these this morning. David approved, so we'll see. Hopefully I didn't screw anything up. Number 12.
Oregon State Beavers.
Ooh.
So bad.
Yeah. Oregon State was shut out again, this time by a very bad Air Force team on the road. Oregon State is 4-6. They will be missing a bowl game.
That's no bueno. Okay. Number 11.
California Golden Bears.
How many games have they lost in a row? Maybe not.
Yeah. Too many. Syracuse beat Cal at home 33-25. Cal is now 5-5. They need to beat Stanford, which seems likely for bowl eligibility, but then they go on the road to SMU. That's probably a loss end of the year. So 6-6 seems likely.
Yeah. This is tough at the bottom because there's a lot of bad teams. Speaking of, number 10.
Stanford Cardinal.
Stanford won on a walk-off field goal over Louisville.
Did you see this at the end?
Yeah, this was stupid. Louisville did everything possible for Stanford to win this game at the end.
They were up, what, 7 or 4? It was 17.
It was 35-35 at the end.
But it was, Louisville was up like 2 scores.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Late, like a minute and something left in the game or whatever. It was like crazy.
Well, no, they were up, it was 35-28.
But I think they scored. So Louisville, it's tied, and Louisville has the ball. First down.
They have a first down at 19 seconds left on the Stanford 45.
In Stanford territory, I think it was 20 seconds, 19 seconds left. There wasn't a turnover. Mm-mm. And Stanford won on a walk-off field goal.
Yes, from the 52-yard. So
that was insane.
I get what Louisville was trying to do. They wanted to try to win the game in regulation and not go to overtime. It was a tie game, 35-35.
Okay. It was 35-21 in the fourth quarter earlier. That's what they're saying. Okay.
All right.
They were down.
Our friend Tyler Shuck, old friend.
Yeah.
Who's still in college football. He drops back to pass 4 straight times and incomplete every single time. So they went from 19 seconds left to 10 seconds left. So only... only 9 seconds came off the clock while they were throwing 4 incomplete passes.
Going for it on fourth down.
Yeah. And the go for it on fourth down was, again, a very quick pass. And it's like, okay, if you're going to go for it on fourth down from that 45, it's got to take a minute. Like, it's got to take a second, and you got to launch that ball because it's got to take, like, 4 seconds off. It doesn't. But even still, you're like, okay, 10 seconds left from the Stanford 45. There's no way. There's no way they're going to do this. Ashton Daniels drops back to pass, throws it 1 yard.
Very Stanford.
But then Louisville gets called for an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, which kicks it all the way to the Louisville 39. So it went from the 46 to the 39. Then on the 39, this is with literally a second left, and even Stanford, it's like, man, they can't. They're not going to be able to make this.
57-yarder they're trying.
Offsides.
Yeah.
And then it's a 52-yarder, and then it's game over. And it's just like... that's the kind of thing that just devastates a program. Like, how do you lose that game? How do you lose in that way? How do you lose in regulation when you had the ball on their side of the field with 10 seconds left and you didn't, like, throw a pick?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Dylan from Albuquerque says Stanford should be ahead of Utah. Okay. I mean, Stanford needed... all the luck in the world just to get that win. They're pretty terrible, but we do have next up, and you know, maybe you could argue this, but number 9.
Utah Utes.
Yeah, I mean, we could put Stanford above them, but like, it took an act of God for Stanford to win that game.
Utah taking on who?
Who did they play?
Colorado.
Oh, yeah, they were taking on our number 2 team.
Colorado Buffaloes.
All right, we might have to switch to being a Big 12 podcast because this is a lot more fun. Like, all of these games are more fun. Colorado blew out Utah. Utah is a fully broken team, but Colorado is in danger of making the playoff.
Wow.
And there's another team in this list that's also in danger of making the playoff, and it's a former Pac-12 team as well. Mm. But yeah, Colorado kicking ass. Full ass.
So Utah, broken program. Athletic director didn't have to get up and yell this time, but still, they're bad. This team actually got a win. Number 8.
Arizona Wildcats.
Yeah, Brent Brennan saving his job, apparently. They won 27-3 at home over a horrible Houston team.
Yeah.
Arizona's probably still not going to make a bowl this year, which is crazy.
Number 7.
USC Trojans.
Ass.
Number 6. They won, though, at least.
UCLA Bruins.
Ass.
Kind of ass. Number five.
Washington Huskies.
Ass.
Number four. We got to use this one for this time.
Washington State Cougars.
Oh, boy.
That was a tough one.
That's a tough loss. Washington State had an outside chance, very outside, but an outside chance at college football playoff. They lost at New Mexico. And this isn't the good New Mexico. New Mexico State is the one that like has a pulse. New Mexico, not great. Washington State lost 35-38.
Yeah, that's no bueno. The Fighting Kenny Dillinghams are doing good. Number three.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
And this is the other team that could be on a collision course with Colorado for the Big 12 title for a play into the playoff. ASU is now 8-2. They went into Manhattan, Kansas and beat number 16 Kansas State 24-14. And it's a little bit closer than the actual game was. They were up 21-0 at halftime.
Wow.
And Kansas State scored 8 late to make this score a little bit better. The game between ASU and number 6 BYU, which just lost to Kansas at home next week, is for a shitload of marbles.
Yes. Pretty impressive what Arizona State and Kenny Dillingham.
Kenny Dillingham is one of the best college football coaches in the United States.
He's pretty good. We are talking about number 2, Colorado, and then number 1, of course.
Oregon Ducks.
That's right, baby.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, well, let's get to some questions. I know I've starred some in the chat. We did get email. Let's see, what was the first email?
Let me look.
Oh, the Nick and the 5-star review submission. You want to start with that?
Sure.
I'll look at these. Okay.
Oh, wait. We already read his email.
Did we read it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, we didn't read his email. We read his review. So.
Okay, so he did get his review in.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'll read this next one.
Okay.
Gentlemen, which dye job do you think is a bigger cry for help? Signetti's hair or Ryan Day's beard? That's a great question. Because I was seeing Signetti when I was... It's the first time it really popped to me, but in the game last week, massive dye job.
Really?
Yeah. Like, no man who's 63 has hair that color.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a cry for help. I think he comes from the Nick Saban school of dyeing your hair. So it might just be like he's learned from the master. And so he's just going to be dyeing his hair now for the rest of his life. Ryan Day's beard looks like... I've always likened him to a dwarf, like somebody who works in the mines of Moria. And it just... Like, what is he going for with the dye? Like... Dyeing a beard is much stranger, I think, than dyeing your hair on top.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe that's just social norms, but like my beard, I'm never going to dye this thing. You know, it's white. It's got some gray in it. It used to be red and cool, but now it just looks old. I look like an old man. When you don't want to have your gray ass face showing anymore, you know what you do? You shave your beard. I don't know what he's doing. But the shoe polish job is weird. I mean, that just looks strange. So I'm going to go Ryan Day is a bigger cry for help.
Okay. Kyle said, needed the sad cougar sound, Ryan. I played it. That was the one.
Washington State Cougars.
Yeah. I gave him that one, Kyle. So I got you. I was following. We got another text message from Poot. Poot. Question for the pod. Did Longstreet flipping drive Lewis to decommit, or did Lewis decommitting allow Longstreet the chance to commit, which came first? So they're talking about USC lost one high profile recruit on Sunday and gained another one. They were both a quarterback spot. Julian Lewis from Georgia was committed for a long time, but not like super committed. Like one of those commits where you're the quarterback, but you're not like texting other prospects, hey, come to USC, that kind of stuff. He visited Colorado, Indiana, you know, two hot programs right now. Georgia got in on him late, but it's sort of been like a relationship that was like hanging on by a thread. So I just think timing wise, they were trying to get the more local kid from Corona Centennial who's on Longstreet to commit. So it wasn't like one drove the other. That was just something that was in the works for a while, and they closed that deal, whatever. It's not signed, but made that happen on Sunday. I don't think there was – it was basically like they were looking for alternatives. Like you're still in a relationship, but you're like looking for other dates, and I think that's what both sides were doing.
How many more decommitments are we looking at for USC over the next, I don't know, few weeks?
I don't know. They had a big one, Hayden Lowe, who switched to Miami, but I feel like – this might help them because you having a quarterback actually recruit, for, you know, try to keep some of those guys home. They just haven't recruited locally good enough. And so Lincoln Riley needs to get more local dudes. They haven't been able to do that. But there could be more decommits. I'm not sure. Okay, let's do a couple chat ones. Robert, Dave. I'm sure you're as professional as Ryan and travel to all the away games to cover your team. Tell us, as a professional, what was your favorite part of your trip to Seattle? Go into detail.
My favorite part of my trip to Seattle was, gosh, so many things. I think it was sitting on my couch in my living room. Was my favorite part of my trip to Seattle.
You went to two away games this year.
It's so true.
That's
so
a
true.
Lot for you.
I went to Hawaii and I went to Nebraska. I want to make it back to Seattle, honestly, because I love that stadium.
I do love going there.
It's probably my favorite venue in the old Pac-12, so I do want to go back, but I just didn't
this year. I was not going to go to the Rose Bowl. It's 7:30 p.m. Like, I got home from the Nebraska game, and it was like 6:30, and I was tired, and I was like, man, next week the game won't even start for an hour, but I'm going to go. I'm going to cover all the games, so whatever. But thank you for the question.
Who covers all their games?
I don't know. That's my job, I guess. But Colt, Ryan, when does Lincoln Riley's buyout become realistic for USC? Seems like most Trojan fans hate watch games now. No, I think you're right. A lot of USC fans would love to get rid of them, but like Pete Thamel reported, and we heard the same number, it was $90 million. And I believe that's after this season. So I don't think a buyout is going to be realistic outside of maybe you get some more, like another, if he gets like a show cause or something from the NCAA, like the one he had recently, the small infraction wasn't much. So I know there was some report out there that they could fire him for that, that's not enough for cause or whatever. So honestly, it'd probably be a couple years, a couple more seasons if it was like still bad and they really wanted to fire him. I don't think it's realistic until, you know, for another couple years. It's just so much money.
Yeah. I mean, if they can, they should. This thing's not, I mean, I'm not even joking. They should.
No,
it's not going to work.
If you're USC, like the best thing you could do is try to make him successful. But he's a very stubborn man. He likes doing things his own way, and he's not adapting to this new world of college football.
It's ridiculous that USC, and as you've said, NIL is getting straightened out there. It's ridiculous that they're only recruiting like a top 15 program.
They need to be recruiting better.
They need to be recruiting like a top 5 program. Like, that's what the cachet is. You can do that at USC, and you can do it very recently, too. Clay Helton had some top 5 classes.
Yeah.
Like, you can do it.
Matthew says, time for the Trojans to leak all his infractions. It's funny, Tennessee did that, right? To, was it Pruitt? I forget who they, like told on themselves so they could kind of get rid of their guy. That was kind of funny when that happened. One last one from Kyle. Jason Shear saying that Brent Brennan was going to be fired if they lost. Is that true? No idea. But Jason knows that stuff usually.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. He's talk about dead in the water. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's still going to be on the table, even if they, you know, they beat Houston, but Houston's terrible. They still have to play ASU, and ASU is probably going to beat them. And then they also have to play, they have to go on the road at TCU. I mean, they can lose that one. If they finish 4-8 in a year where, you know, when Jed Fish was still the coach, they were talking about this potentially being a playoff team. They're not going to make a bowl game. I don't know. I'd fire him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what his buyout situation is, but if you can come up with the money from that well-heeled booster or whatever, fire his ass. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things.
Clock ticks fast these days. Like, you don't get multiple years to fumble around. I mean, when you have a coach who is of the Neuheisel school of coaching, you fire them as soon as you humanly possibly can.
Yeah.
And that guy is a Neuheisel coach.
Matt in the chat says Rule has like a $50 to $60 million buyout. Yeah, that's the problem, is a lot of these athletic directors are signing players to, I mean, coaches to these massive, massive buyouts. But it's, if you're going to hire someone like Brett Brennan, you shouldn't have that big of a buyout. And it's one of those things where it's like by the second date, you know, this isn't going to work out and you just need to move on. Unfortunately, in these situations, it's almost like you're jumping into the committed relationship right yep. away. But if you do hire someone that's more of a like question mark, and he's not going to have the kind of terms that a very much a proven coach would do, like Brett Brennan had a one good season, right? In the 2020, like pandemic year, and that's it. So hopefully
it was the pandemic year, which doesn't count. Like it, everything was so weird that season. Like, and every other year he had the worst year in San Jose State history, the worst. San Jose State is a horrible program, and he had the worst year. Like, he's not good.
Yeah.
He never was good.
Yeah. So that's one of those things where I think you could move on. We saw Washington do it with Jimmy Lake, right? They moved on in 2 years. You might – hopefully it can be a situation like this where you hired a guy that didn't have a ton of leverage, so the buyout's probably not going to be too terrible. All right. Well, I'm going to go take my mom to La Brea Tar Pits.
Is that it for us? We have no more questions?
No more questions. That was a good show, I think.
Wait.
Do we have another one?
Oh, no. You're right. You're right.
Oh, wait. Oh, we got an email, but it's like SEO tips.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's gonna wrap things up. Somehow we still talked a long time, even though... I mean, there was some...
Gopher Insight brings up a point. If schools have the money, they may as well buy players instead of a new coach to some extent. Here's the thing. If your coach is a hard cap on your potential success, which is what I believe Brent Brennan is, because, again, we got to hold multiple thoughts within our mind. Players matter, but in college sports and the NFL, coaching matters too.
Yeah.
And this same group of players, more or less, went like 10-2 last year. Like, Noah Fifita was a much better quarterback last year. Teteroa McMillan is still there. And they look like this.
Yeah.
That's coaching. That's your schemes. That's all that stuff. So this should still be a good team. And they're going to be 4-8. And it's not as if they don't have some players. Teteroa McMillan is probably still one of the very best receivers in college football.
Yeah, it has to be.
Like, throw the ball up to him and let him come down with it. Could be your offense in most, you know, conferences. And you would finish above 500.
We did. Hold on.
There was a super chat?
I think there was.
Oh, there was. Yeah, we missed it.
Let me pull it up here. Hold on. Oh, wait.
Storage unit picking.
Yes.
All joking aside, can you invite the resident Rutgers fan onto the podcast for a full episode? We need more than 3 minutes of him. Keep it mediocre.
We would definitely invite him. He's welcome to come into the studio.
Yeah,
we'll even have security for
him.
We'll
send a car for him. Yeah. We just need to get his address, but we'll send a car for him to pick him up, send him to the airport.
Yes.
Yeah, and it'll be a very secure car. He'll feel very safe.
Dylan wants to know, he didn't call in after the Stanford win. Sometimes he's busy earlier in the week if business is booming.
Well, if emotions got high,
yes.
Sometimes he likes to engage in some other activities before calling in.
Yes, but I would say...
Let off some steam.
Stanford won and Rutgers won. We needed to hear from him. And Stanford won in a very weird way. I wanted to hear his explanation of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we would love to have him in studio. And I'll give you your gift card when you get here. And we'll have extra security for you.
So true. Yeah.
Yes.
And you'll feel very secure because they will all have guns.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be there to keep everyone safe.
Everyone but you. Okay. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.